Let's take a look at a woman who has a uterus who wants estrogen, but she doesn't want the risk of cancer in her uterus.
What do we do with her?
Well, we give her a little estrogen, but we also give her some progesterone. And what happens is, and they're different regimens, so don't take this particular regimen as the gospel, because it isn't. We give the Big E days 1 through 25 of each calendar month, and we give this progesterone days 16 through 25. If you calculate on your fingers, that's 10 days worth of progesterone. We know from studies that 10 days of progesterone each month will prevent the development of endometrial, or the lining inside the uterus, cancer. It also may make people bleed. And the one frustrating thing for a woman who's now been without menstrual periods for 3 years, who finally says, I break down, I'm going to take this dumb estrogen stuff. And you put her on both the estrogen and progesterone, and she starts having menstrual periods, she gets on the phone real fast. She doesn't like that. And we can usually manipulate that by decreasing the dose of estrogen to the point where she doesn't bleed. Not always. It's not a sure thing, but at 90% of them we can get so they don't bleed. And just this 10 days of progesterone, even without bleeding, is enough to prevent the development of a cancerous change inside the uterus. There are some physicians who, before they will use the estrogen, always biopsy the lining inside the uterus to make sure there isn't cancer growing there to begin with. Other physicians figure that the estrogen in one or two cycles of abnormal bleeding outside of the end of therapy, any bleeding in the middle of therapy here is an automatic biopsy. For sure. In mine, obviously, it is. This usually resolves all symptoms of menopause, and I ask people that are on this regimen to take a gram of calcium, or 100 or 1,000 milligrams. And there are a number of different preparations out that'll do that, but my favorite one is called OsCal. It's ground up oyster shells, as I understand it, and it's got readily available calcium in it. It is the least expensive, or one of the least expensive preparations, and it's available over the counter. You don't need a prescription for it. Each pill of OsCal has about a glass and a half of milk's worth of calcium. People who drink calcium don't need to take the extra calcium.
How much? Milk.
Yeah, 3 glasses will give you 1,000 milligrams. It's about 300, 325 milligrams of calcium in a glass. Yes.
What about your chances of getting bursitis from the extra calcium?
That has not been a problem so far. Okay. I think that there are people who are prone to do that, and I think you want to check with your internist or your family doctor about that and achieve a balance. And maybe at that point you do need to get in. Most of us, I think, will handle this load of calcium just fine, assuming you have normal fluid intake.
Does it matter if it's low fat, full?
No. The fat content of the milk will not influence its calcium value. Yes. Okay, that brings up another point. Let me answer that in just a minute here. Yes?
Or
brush
about
that.
Calcium, right? Pretty good. If you don't have enough of it, if you do something like that, it doesn't matter.
That's true, but in people who are eating green leafy vegetables and this kind of stuff, which is an alternative, another source of vitamin D, you probably don't have to worry. All the milk is fortified with vitamin D. Vitamin D can result in some overdose symptoms, and so people who go out and buy some calcium and buy some vitamin D as well may get into that. I think we're beginning to learn about some of the overdose problems with vitamins, and fat-soluble vitamins are the ones that are giving overdoses. The water-soluble vitamins, what you don't use right away, you get rid of in your urine anyway. I don't know if you take a B vitamin complex and you take it in the morning with your breakfast and you look at your urine mid-morning, it's a bright yellow or orangey color. And that's not because it's concentrated, which is the other reason it might turn orange. It's because it's got a lot of vitamin D in it. So you get rid of that very quickly. To get back to the progesterone issue, there are two progesterones on the market if you exclude generics, which are just beginning to come out with progesterone. One of them is called Provera, which is what you were talking about. And one of them is called a man, which is probably more appropriate for up here. The cost difference is is minimal, pennies between each tablet. And in some women, especially a woman who's had breast cancer before, we don't want to give her estrogen. So we will provide dosages of Provera, and what I've given my patients is 10 milligrams twice a day. And that oftentimes will cancel out the symptoms of the hot flushes. Now, whether that's because some of this is converted in our body tissues to estrogen, and that's enough estrogen to cancel the hot flushes or whatever, nobody really has good information about that. We know there is interconversion between these two in our bodies. We have all the enzyme machinery to do that. So that, and yes, how long do you take all this? We've covered that. As long as you want to avoid the symptoms. And the issue is that as long as you have the estrogen hormone, or if you're taking one of these things, as long as you have that source of hormones, your system stays stabilized in equilibrium with that. When you remove that hormone, whether it's at age 48 because you run out of eggs, or whether it's because your doctor's taken your ovaries out at age 28, or whether it's because you've stopped taking your estrogen at 65, you will still then have that transition between hormone and non-hormone. And that's the change. The change is what produces that. Now, there are a number of women who have that for a transient period of time, 6 months, a year, 2 years. And then they're over with it and they don't have that hassle anymore. And there are other women that it just goes on. It doesn't stop.
But what is the long-term lack?
The long-term lack of it is the danger of... No, not the cancers. Don't worry about cancer with lack of estrogen that anybody knows about at this point. But you do get into reabsorption of calcium out of the bones.
What is that called?
Osteoporosis.
I have some Indian
Right. And if you look at the people that die or get into serious trouble because of cancer in the lining of their uterus, and compare that with the number of people who break their hip because of osteoporosis, and the number of hospital days that are used by each, and the cost of caring for each of these illnesses, by far and away, there are far more people developing fractured hips secondary to osteoporosis, or, you know, people get shorter as they get older. Why? Yeah. Why? Because they've reabsorbed calcium out of their bones, they're collapsing their vertebrae in their back. They're collapsing. And they get shorter because their vertebrae, instead of being this high, is only this high. So that's another indication of the osteoporosis issue. And it's, you know, that's a perhaps more subtle one, but the fractured hips and the cost of the fractured hips and the death rate from women who fracture their hips, they're old, they're fragile, they have to lie in bed, or they have to have a surgical procedure, they're dying of pneumonia, they're dying of heart complications. A lot of these old ladies are just fine. I have a lot of trouble with this because I take care of women and I like to see them up and active and doing their thing for as long as they can possibly do it. And when I see somebody who breaks their hip, they go in, they get a pin, they got all this metal in their hip, and the doctor's getting them walking in a walker 2 days after their surgery, and they're doing pretty good, but they just never make it back into their home. Here's a lady who's been self-sufficient up until this time. Well, she's not trimming her trees and picking her fruit and stuff off the trees and canning like she was, but she's getting around. She's able to go to the store. She's able to get out to places she wants to go. She walks. She takes care of her house. And she's able to care for herself. She breaks her hip. She's in the hospital. And now she goes into some kind of sheltered care situation. And that's one of the areas our society needs to take a look at, because there are very few sheltered care situations. And so when they're all done, Then she goes into a nursing home. She may not need a nursing home. Yes?
I have a question. Do you have group people who receive that particular adjustment from home that you have to, we want to pass on through?
There's enough data to say that if there's an increase, it's very teeny tiny. That's the data that we have so far. But to tell you unequivocally, this is the risk for breast cancer, it may be there, but it's very, very high.
Okay, the same question goes for the people who have familial history of cancer years. Do you have data to support that people who get
Yes. It's not a guarantee you don't get it, but the risk, if you take a group of women that have a familial history of cancer, you put them into a study, you do a biopsy and make sure they don't have study of cancer, you find that women in the study, and take another group of women with very similar ages, cancer history, number of children, and this kind of thing, and you give those people estrogen reduction, and these people have estrogen reduction, and they both develop cancer at the same time. Another estrogen reduction area. The greater cancer development is the same.
If you were to get a group of women who have it, and if you have them study your cancer, and
they may develop some osteoporosis depending upon the kidney levels and how much estrogen they're taking, but they will not develop osteoporosis anywhere near the rate that women do not take estrogen or calcium. You take women, no estrogen, twice as much calcium, and you put them into some kind of an daily exercise program, like your exercise program that they go to, and they keep that up to the best of their ability for the next 25 years, that, you know, they will maintain their calcium level in their bones to a much better extent than women who doesn't take estrogen or take calcium.
People are
a little bit antsy about us doing bone biopsies and proving how much calcium and putting into the bones. If we do that, then we have the issue of which bone should we biopsy. So we don't do that. We're using, if you will, techniques which indirectly measure the density of bones, and they're beginning to get fairly sophisticated with that. And we've now got that probably going on for about 10 years.
When you talk about mental health, they can also be
changes another. Any other calcium on green, the green vegetables. Yes.
When you talk about
that,
are you recommended?
If I was a woman, I would. If I was a woman, I think I probably would. Mm-hmm. Even if I didn't have hot flashes. I don't like the idea that when I'm 75 and just creaking along on my own, but just puttering around in my own house, that I'm going to bust something. Yeah, I know myself well enough to know that I'm not going to take 2 grams of calcium a day. That's a pill that you have to take 4 times a day. And I just take that once a day. I'll manage that. Pardon? No, it's an ongoing thing. Right? It's probably something you can't. Yes, that's a long-term estrogen. No.
When did you start this study? Wasn't it just estrogen?
Yes, yes. It's been the last five years, 10 years, that this concept of adding the progesterone to it has come out, and now I think it's pretty well established, and the data is just incredible about that.
And that's about safer with progesterone?
If you have a uterus. And some people are even doing it if you don't have a uterus. There are two different kinds of data. There's soft data and there's hard data. Hard data is that anybody can challenge it, and man, the data is there. It just says it cold. It's proven beyond all reasonable shadow of a doubt. And then there's soft data. And soft data means it's got a lot of defects in the type of study that was done. And you can find ways that this might have occurred or this might have occurred, you know. And it's probable, but it's not really good hard data. And so some of the stuff, the stuff that comes out about use of estrogen and progesterone in a woman who has no uterus, for whatever reason, is beginning to look as if maybe there's even a decrease in the usual incidence of breast cancer. But that is such soft data that I really hesitate to say, do that if you don't have a uterus, because that could be turned around in the next 2 years as that study gets on. So I don't think that, if you don't have a, the biggest worry is cancer inside the uterus. And if you're taking the progesterone, you protect against that. If you have a uterus. Okay. Let me get somebody who hasn't asked a question.
If at somewhere around the age of 49 or 50, you develop real serious mental problems on top of that, you go into estrogen therapy and you take that estrogen for 10 years, the minute you stop it, you're still going to have the same set of problems.
Change is a process. It's like puberty. Puberty and menopause are the same thing, but in reverse.
Okay. So you never have to go through all that.
Crabby, your 12-year-old daughter is. Well, that's how crabby her mother is when she's going through the menopause.
So there's hope that we'll be done.
Yes. Oh yes, oh absolutely. There's all shades of black and white here. It's
possible that someone may not be any.
Absolutely, yeah. Until for the 3 to 5 years with no estrogen, at which time the changes in the vaginal lining and the bladder and this kind of thing have had a chance to occur. And at that point then we begin to get some of the vaginitis that some older women who don't take estrogen begin to get. They get more frequent bladder infections, they have more difficulty in terms of some of their elasticity has gone out of the tissues, and so more sexual difficulties. And for some people that isn't a difficulty, but a lot of people come in with that. And that's reversible. That takes all 3 to 6 months on estrogen, and that's back to when she was menstruating status pretty much. Yeah, KY jelly is the best. Some people use Vaseline, which is what you ought to use for the pistons in your car. And it doesn't work real good for sexual activity. Did you have a question or did we answer it?
I'm just wondering if today, now, my daughter just turned 60 and has not had estrogen treatment or anything for many years. She had a stroke patient. And just, she has never had a
No. And I would say that in that situation she can do a number of things. She can go on estrogen. What happens, and let's just look at this, and this is years, and this is the bone density or the calcium in the bones. And stop estrogen right here, and the bone density gradually kind of peters out here. over a long period of time, and that's with nothing. Okay? If you take calcium, the bone density will still go down, but it doesn't go down as fast. So we'll put that's the calcium. If you take the estrogen and take some calcium, you tend to stay stable. However, if at some point in time you stop taking the estrogen, you then, and you were to continue taking the calcium, within a very short time you'd get down to this line. If you were to stop taking the calcium as well, within a very short period of time, you will get down to that line. So that once you stop, I don't know why that is, and nobody else does either, but that tends to be what happens. Now, if you're on this line, doing nothing, and you all of a sudden start taking calcium, what tends to happen is you flatten this line at whatever point you're on. If you're taking the calcium and the estrogen, some people now have begun to measure what they think is a slight increase, but that's a long-term process. And there's still data being collected about this. And I think that the end result is in. Maybe we can reverse it significantly, but I think that if there's no uterus and she hasn't had any kind of a breast cancer, and that'll depend on what kind of breast cancer she had, then I wouldn't have any hesitation about putting her back on hormone replacement and a calcium replacement and getting her on a program to do some work. Or fighting with her grandchildren, whatever. Yes?
What
are
your suggestions on
that if they get migraine headaches or estrogen replacement, that we better find something else to do? Yes. It's interesting because a migraine headache is vascular blood vessel instability. It gets in a whammo and then it dilates. Bad headache. The estrogen is supposed to stabilize blood vessels. As I said earlier, the reason hot flushes happen is because with no estrogen, the blood vessels are unstable and they dilate, which is what the flush is. And then come back to normal. So, it's an apparent contradiction that I don't think we have a good answer for yet. Men probably tend to be more active than women for longer periods of time in their life. And so their development of osteoporosis is less, but they do over a period of time. And again, it may be just calcium. How many older people? I don't see very many. Number one, I don't see men drinking a lot of milk anyway. And number two, older men, even less. So they are really calcium deficient in their diet. And I suspect that men, with the amount of golf or whatever they do when they're retired, puttering around and mowing lawns, which they're more likely to do, at least in our society at this point, they maintain their weight bearing activity, and if they take calcium replacement, they probably will not become as osteoporotic.
Well,
okay,
I confused at this point because every time I'm running into our pastor, they keep telling me we got that history. So don't, and they can't continue me off of that because I had this journey years ago. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I went to history. Pretty sure I'm pretty time, but it wasn't right after that. It was years later, and just because some doctor helped me. But now I haven't taken it for 10 years. And so I really have to go back now.
Don't have to. There's no have to.
Well, okay, excuse me, I know that, but I need to improve the situation myself.
Well, you're probably sitting on this line here. Not only that, you're really physically active, and you do a lot of weight bearing stuff. So if you supplement your calcium, you probably put enough stress on your bones that your bones are going to stay in good shape anyway. What I have to avoid here is trying to tell you what your doctor ought to do.
Yeah, okay.
And you've got to recognize that while medicine is supposed to be a science, there is a large percent science and a lot of percent opinion. And this kind of information that I'm providing is stuff that's been developed in the last 4 to 6 years and begins to be talked about, and you've got to recognize that the textbook that I have in my office that I bought last year is now 6 years out of date. Okay? So it doesn't have some of the latest stuff. That comes out in our journal. why it's important for us to be continually looking at our journals, reading articles, and paying attention. And so some of the stuff that I'm telling you is coming out in journals in the last 2 years, and that's not native to the textbook. And sometimes guys will, you know, guys will go into their offices and begin to do some of the new things. This estrogen progesterone thing is fairly new. It's going to take a long time for that to get around to every doctor's office. The other thing is that if a family practitioner is very inclined towards internal medicine, he may take care of people with epilepsy, people with migraines, and he may be still convinced that estrogen creates a lot of heart disease, hypertension, and strokes, which is the one thing I didn't talk about very well in a minute. And he won't give it to you because he feels that it's bad. But I think the evidence is mounting and mounting rapidly that it's not the case.
Okay, that, when you talk about stroke, okay, that's possible. Right, because it seems to me after I had an aneurysm is when they took me off of it.
Yeah, he gets nervous.
Okay,
the high blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. And that's long been something they've talked about with birth control pills and women who are taking higher dosage birth control pills these days, that still is a risk. Our dosage in the birth control pills has come down to about 30% of what it was 10 years ago in terms of the average woman taking birth control pills. The second thing about birth control pills are large amounts of estrogen, whereas the estrogen replacement that we give after the menopause is just a teeny bit of fraction of what we use in birth control pills. So we're really using terribly potent estrogens in a birth control pill, and we're using low estrogens in replacement. That's one factor that decreases the risk of blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. The other thing that's been done, and there are about three large studies comprising over 50,000 women that have now come out. They're all retrospective, that is, they start at the point in time and look backwards over women's records in large hospital settings, where they have taken estrogens and they have good records and follow up on them. And they have found that the women who take estrogen replacement develop high blood pressure, heart disease, and strokes at no greater a frequency than the women who do not take these medications. So much of the data about estrogens that is on the product insert that you get if you get a prescription of estrogen is data that's derived from birth control pills, and the FDA has just included it. So, since birth control pills contain the calcium. Okay. Well, let's take a look at a woman who has a uterus who wants estrogen, but she doesn't want the risk of cancer in her uterus. What do we do with her? Well, we give her a little estrogen, but we also give her some progesterone. And what happens is, and they're different regimens, so don't take this particular regimen as the gospel, because it isn't. We give the big E days 1 through 25 of each calendar month, and we give this progesterone days 16 through 25. If you calculate on your fingers, that's 10 days worth of progesterone. We know from studies that 10 days of progesterone each month will prevent the development of endometrial, or the lining inside the uterus, cancer. It also may make people bleed. And the one frustrating thing for a woman who's now been without menstrual periods for 3 years, who finally says, "I break down, I'm going to take this dumb estrogen stuff," and you put her on both the estrogen and progesterone, and she starts having menstrual periods, is she gets on the phone real fast. She doesn't like that. And we can usually manipulate that by decreasing the dose of estrogen to the point where she doesn't leave. Not always. It's not a sure thing, but at 90% of them we can get so they don't bleed. And just this 10 days of progesterone, even without bleeding, is enough to prevent the development of a cancerous change inside the uterus. There are some physicians who, before they will use the estrogen, always biopsy the lining inside the uterus to make sure there isn't cancer growing there to begin with. Other physicians figure that the estrogen in one or two cycles will have abnormal bleeding outside of the end of therapy. Any bleeding in the middle of therapy here is an automatic biopsy. For sure. In mine, often it is. This usually resolves all symptoms of menopause, and I ask people that are on this regimen to take a gram of calcium, or 100 or 1,000 milligrams. And there are a number of different preparations out that'll do that, but my favorite one is called OsCal. It's ground up oyster shells, as I understand it, and it's got readily available calcium in it. It is the least expensive, or one of the least expensive preparations, and it's available over the counter. You don't have a prescription for it. Each pill of OsCal has about a glass and a half of milk's worth of calcium in it. People who drink calcium don't need calcium. If you drink milk, don't need to take the extra calcium.
How much? Milk.
Yeah, three glasses will give you 1,000 milligrams. It's about 300, 325 milligrams of calcium in a glass. Yes.
What about your chances of getting bursitis
from this? That has not been a problem so far. Okay. I think that there are people who are prone to do that, and I think you want to check with your internist or your family doctor about that and achieve a balance. And maybe at that point you do need to get in. Most of us, I think, will handle this load of calcium just fine, assuming you have normal fluid intake.
Does it matter if it's low fat, cold?
No. The fat content of the milk will not influence its calcium value. Yes. Okay, that brings up another point. Let me answer that in just a minute here. Yes?
Or a question about that. You know, I'll say in the record, if you don't have a medical degree or something like that, there isn't a lot of calcium in the world.
That's true, but and people who are eating green leafy vegetables and this kind of stuff, which is an alternative, you know, another source of vitamin D, you probably don't have to worry. All the milk is fortified with vitamin D. Vitamin D can result in some overdose symptoms, and so people who go out and buy some calcium and buy some vitamin D as well may get into that. I think we're beginning to learn about some of the overdose problems with vitamins, and fat-soluble vitamins are the ones that are giving overdose. The water-soluble vitamins, what you don't use right away, you get rid of in your urine anyway. I don't know if you take a B vitamin complex and you take it in the morning with your breakfast and you look at your urine mid-morning, it's a bright yellow or orangey color. And that's not because it's concentrated, which is the other reason it might turn orange. It's because it's got a lot of vitamin B in it. So you get rid of that very quickly. To get back to the progesterone issue, there are two progesterones on the market if you exclude generics, which are just beginning to come out with progesterone. One of them is called Provera, which is what you were talking about. And one of them is called Aman, which is probably more appropriate for up here. The cost difference is minimal, pennies between each tablet. And in some women, especially a woman who's had breast cancer before, we don't want to give her estrogen. So we will provide dosages of Provera, and what I've given my patients is 10 milligrams twice a day. And that oftentimes will cancel out the symptoms of the hot flushes. Now, whether that's because some of this is converted in our body tissues to estrogen, and that's enough estrogen to cancel the hot flushes or whatever, nobody really has good information about that. We know there is interconversion between these two in our bodies. We have all the enzyme machinery to do that. So that, and yes, how long do you take all this? We'll cover that. As long as you want to avoid the symptoms. And the issue is that as long as you have the estrogen hormone, or if you're taking one of these things, as long as you have that source of hormones, your system stays stabilized in equilibrium with that. When you remove that hormone, whether it's at age 48 because you run out of eggs, or whether it's because your doctor's taken your ovaries out at age 28, or whether it's because you've stopped taking your estrogen at 65, you will still then have that transition between hormone and non-hormone. And that's the change.
That's what it is.
Okay. The change is, you know, then is what produces that. Now, there are a number of women who have that for a transient period of time, 6 months, a year, 2 years. And then they're over with it and they don't have that hassle anymore. And there are other women that it just goes on. It doesn't stop.
But what is it
The long-term lack of it is the danger of, no, not the cancers. Don't worry about cancer with lack of estrogen that anybody knows about at this point. But you do get into reabsorption of calcium out of the bones.
What is that called?
Osteoporosis.
I have some Indian
Right. And if you look at the people that die or get into serious trouble because of cancer in the lining of their uterus, and compare that with the number of people who break their hip because of osteoporosis, and the number of hospital days that are used by each, and the cost of caring for each of these illnesses, by far and away, there are far more people developing fractured hips secondary to osteoporosis, or, you know, people get shorter as they get older. Why? Yeah. Why? Because they've reabsorbed calcium out of their bones, they're collapsing their vertebrae in their back. They're collapsing, and they get shorter because their vertebra, instead of being this high, is only this high. So that's another indication of the osteoporosis issue, and it's, you know, that's a perhaps more subtle one, but the fractured hips and the cost of the fractured hips and the death rate from women who fracture their hips, they're old, they're fragile, they have to lie in bed, or they have to have a surgical procedure, they're dying of pneumonia, they're dying of heart complications. A lot of these old ladies are just fine. They're just, you know, and just I have a lot of trouble with this because I take care of women and I like to see them up and active and doing their thing for as long as they can possibly do it. And when I see somebody who breaks their hip, they go in, they get it pinned, they got all this metal in their hip, and the doctor's getting them walking in a walker 2 days after their surgery, and they're doing pretty good, but they just never make it back into their home. Here's a lady who's been self-sufficient up until this time. Well, she's, you know, she's not trimming her trees and picking her fruit and stuff off the trees and canning like she was, but she's getting around. She's able to go to the store. She's able to get out to places she wants to go. She walks. She takes care of her house. And she's able to care for herself. She breaks her hip. She's in the hospital. And now she goes into some kind of sheltered care situation, and that's one of the areas our society needs to take a look at, because there are very few sheltered care situations, and so when they're all done, then she goes into a nursing home. She may not need a nursing home. Yes?
I have a question.
Do they have a familial history for osteoporosis? advice or what way they guarantee that they put the calcium in their brain and not develop the osteoporosis.
They may develop some osteoporosis depending upon the kidney levels and how much estrogen they take, but they will not develop osteoporosis anywhere in their brain if women do not take estrogen or calcium. If you take women no estrogen, twice as much calcium, and you put them in some kind of next daily exercise program, like gravity exercise program that they go to, and they keep that up to the best of their ability for the next 25 years, that, you know, they will maintain their calcium level in their bones to a much better extent than when it doesn't take estrogen or take calcium.
If I was a woman, I would. If I was a woman, I think I probably would. Mm-hmm. Even if I didn't have hot flashes. I don't like the idea that when I'm 75 and just creaking along on my own, but just puttering around in my own house, that I'm going to bust something. Yeah. I know myself well enough to know that I'm not going to take 2 grams of calcium a day. That's a pill that you have to take 4 times a day. And I just take that once a day. I'll manage that. Pardon? No, it's an ongoing thing. It's probably something you can't. Yes, that's a long-term estrogen. No.
Yes. Just
yes. It's been the last 10 years that this concept of adding the progesterone to it has come out, and I think it's pretty well established, and the data is just incredible about that.
And that's about safer with progesterone?
If you have a uterus. And some people are even doing it if you don't have a uterus. There are two different kinds of data. There's soft data and there's hard data. Hard data is that anybody can challenge it, and man, the data's there. It just says it cold. It's proven beyond all reasonable shadow of a doubt. And then there's soft data. And soft data means it's got a lot of defects in the type of study that was done. And you can find ways that this might have occurred or this might have occurred, you know. And it's probable, but it's not really good hard data. And so some of the stuff, the stuff that comes out about use of estrogen and progesterone in a woman who has no uterus, for whatever reason, is beginning to look as if maybe there's even a decrease in the usual incidence of breast cancer. But that is such soft data that I really hesitate to say, do that if you don't have a uterus, because that could be turned around in the next 2 years as that study gets on. So I don't think that. If you don't have the biggest worry is cancer inside the uterus. And if you're taking the progesterone, you protect against that.
If you were just taking the estrogen, some
evidence
that there's more chance of cancer,
or less estrogen? If you have a uterus. Okay. Let me get somebody here to ask a question. Yes.
If at somewhere around here, 49 or 50, you develop real serious mental health, you go into estrogen therapy, and you take that estrogen for 10 years,
Which is not going to mitigate the circumstance in any way.
No.
If you take that there and say it with your doc, you will never have to go through the change.
Yeah, the change is a process. It's like puberty. Puberty and menopause are the same thing, but in reverse.
Okay. So you never have to go through all that.
Crabby your 12-year-old daughter is, well, that's how crabby that her mother is when she's going through the menopause.
So there's hope for me. You're talking about the
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. There's all shades of black and white here. It's
possible that some of them may not have anything.
Absolutely, yeah. Until, as I say, until for the 3 to 5 years with no estrogen, at which time the changes in the vaginal lining and the bladder and this kind of thing have had a chance to occur, and at that point then we begin to get some of the vaginitis that some older women who don't take estrogen begin to get. They get more frequent bladder infections. They have more difficulty in terms of some of their elasticity has gone out of the tissues, and so more sexual difficulties. And for some people, that isn't a difficulty, but a lot of people come in with that. And that's reversible. That takes 3 to 6 months on estrogen, and that's back to when she was menstruating status, pretty much. Yeah, KY jelly is the best. Some people use Vaseline, which is what you ought to use for the pistons in your car. And it doesn't work real good for sexual activity. Did you have a question, or did we answer it?
I'm just wondering if you're dead today. Now, my mother just turned 60, and has not had estrogen for 20 years. She had a hysterectomy.
And she has
never had a
hormone
replacement or calcium.
Is
it ever too late?
No. And I would say that in that situation, she can do a number of things. She could go on estrogen. What happens, and let's just look at this, and this is years, and this is the bone density, or the calcium in the bones, and stop estrogen right here, and the bone density gradually kind of peters out here over a long period of time, and that's with nothing, okay? If you take calcium, the bone density will still go down, but it doesn't go down as fast, so we'll put that's the calcium. If you take the estrogen and take some calcium, you tend to stay stable. However, if at some point in time you stop taking the estrogen, you were to continue taking the calcium, within a very short time you'd get down to this line. If you were to stop taking the calcium as well, within a very short period of time, you will get down to that line. So that once you stop, I don't know why that is, and nobody else does either, but that tends to be what happens. Now, if you're on this line, doing nothing, and you all of a sudden start taking calcium, what tends to happen is you flatten this line at whatever point you're on. If you're taking the calcium and the estrogen, some people now have begun to measure what they think is a slight increase, but that's a long-term process. And there's still data being collected about this. And I think the end result is in. Maybe we can reverse it significantly, but I think that if there's no uterus and she hasn't had any kind of a breast cancer, and that'll depend on what kind of breast cancer she had, then I wouldn't have any hesitation about putting her back on hormone replacement and calcium replacement and getting her on a program and doing some work. Or fighting with her grandchildren, whatever. Yes?
What are your suggestions on migraine headaches in response to the
long day of estrogen? That if they get migraine headaches on estrogen replacement, that we better find something else to do. Yes. It's interesting because a migraine headache is vascular blood vessel instability. It gets in a whammo and then it dilates bad day. The estrogen is supposed to stabilize blood vessels. As I said earlier, the reason hot flushes happen is because with no estrogen, the blood vessels are unstable and they dilate, which is what the flush is, and then come back to normal. So, you know, it's an apparent contradiction that I don't think we have a good answer for yet. Men probably tend to be more active than women for longer periods of time in their life. And so their development of osteoporosis is less, but they do over a period of time. And again, it may be just calcium ion. One of the older people, I don't see very many. Number one, I don't see men drinking a lot of milk anyway. And number two, older men, even less. So they are really calcium deficient in their diet. And I suspect that men, with the amount of golf or whatever they do when they're retired, puttering around and mowing lawns, which they're more likely to do, at least in our society at this point, than women. But they maintain their weight-bearing activity, and as they take calcium replacement, they probably will not become as osteoporotic.
Okay, I'm confused at this point because every time I come in with our pastor, they keep telling me to get that estrogen. So don't, and they continue me off of that because I had an estrogen years ago. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I only took estrogen for a really short period of time, but it wasn't my accident. It was years later, and just because some doctor wanted to. But now I haven't taken it for 10 years. And so I really don't have to go back now.
Don't have to. There's no after.
Well, okay, excuse me, I know that, but I need to improve the situation
yourself. You're probably sitting on this line here. Not only that, you're really physically active, and you do a lot of weight-bearing stuff. And so if you supplement your calcium, you probably put enough stress on your bones that you're going to stay in good shape anyway. What I have to avoid here is trying to tell you what your doctor ought to do.
Yeah, I know that.
And you've got to recognize that while medicine is supposed to be a science, there is a large percent science and a lot of percent opinion. And this kind of information that I'm providing is stuff that's been developed in the last 4 to 6 years and begins to be talked about. And you've got to recognize that the textbook that I have in my office that I bought last year is now 6 years out of date. Okay? So it doesn't have some of the latest stuff. That comes out in our journals, which is why it's important for us to be continually looking at our journals, reading articles, and paying attention. And so some of the stuff that I'm telling you is coming out in journals in the last 2 years. And that's not native to the textbook. And sometimes guys will go into their offices and begin to do some of the new things. This estrogen progesterone thing is fairly new. It's going to take a long time for that to get around to every doctor's office. The other thing is that if a family practitioner is very inclined towards internal medicine, he may take care of people with epilepsy, people with migraines, and he may be still convinced that estrogen creates a lot of heart disease, hypertension, and strokes. This is the one thing I didn't talk about, and I will in a minute. And he won't give it to you because he feels that it's bad. But I think the evidence is mounting and mounting rapidly that it's not the case.
Okay, that, when you talk about stroke, okay, that's possible. Right, because it seems to me after I had an aneurysm is when they took me off of it.
Yeah, he gets nervous.
Okay,
the high blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. And that's long been something they've talked about with birth control pills and women who are taking higher dosage birth control pills these days, that still is a risk. Our dosage in the birth control pills has come down to about 30% of what it was 10 years ago in terms of the average woman taking birth control pills. The second thing about birth control pills are large amounts of estrogen, whereas the estrogen replacement that we give after the menopause is just a teeny bit fraction of what we use in birth control pills. So we're really using terribly potent estrogens in a birth control pill, and we're using low estrogens in replacement. That's one factor that decreases the risk of blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. The other thing that's been done, and there are about three large studies comprising over 50,000 women that have now come out they're all retrospective, that is, they start at the point in time and look backwards over women's records in large hospital settings where they have taken estrogens and they have good records and follow up on them. And they have found that the women who take estrogen replacement develop high blood pressure, heart disease, and strokes at no greater a frequency than the women who do not take these medications. So much of the data about estrogens that is on the product insert that you get if you get a prescription of estrogen is data that's derived from birth control pills, and the FDA has just included it. So since birth control pills contain the same stuff.